You are tuned to the dirt.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found.
That's affirmative. He has evidence proving Bigfoot.
The search for the flying saucer.
You're about to explore another world, another universe, with the likes of Guru, Bigfoot, and UFO.
I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know what it was.
He is overshadowed by the energy from the world teacher, and the world teacher uses him and gives a blessing.
And all of a sudden, I realized that the banging is coming from my kitchen. Instantly, I froze. I was so scared.
They said they heard a disembodied scream, like a bloody scream, like something bad was happening.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt today. I just want to thank everybody for tuning in to KMYC 1410 AM. And today we have a guest that's returning back, Elaine D'Angelo, and she was on last week, and I'm going to let her kind of explain what happened, but if anybody would like to call in today, I just want to get the number out there. It's 530-742-5555, and I also want to say hi to my daughter, Josie Schultz. She's here with me. She's my little co-host, basically just keeping me company. And also Chris Singleton, who's running the show back there as usual. Hi, Chris.
Yo, how you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here, you guys. And I want to let everybody know at the bottom of the hour, we've got Betsy Lewis. She is an author and psychic radio talk show host and Earth Mysteries investigator. So we've got a full show, and I don't want to delay it any further. So Elaine D'Angelo, are you there?
Hi, Lori. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I'm sorry I can't look at your daughter. I'll have to because I'm in the car. So I want to see. She looks like you. Yeah, she
looks just like me, along with my other daughter, so they're kind of like my little mini-me's. But you'll be able to see a rerun. You can see the podcast later.
Yes, I will. So, yeah, we had an interesting event last week, didn't we?
Yes, we did, and we spoke right afterwards, and so...
Oh, I want to ask Chris, are you there?
Chris is actually in here fixing on the camera, so just you might have to just wait a minute to talk to him. He's kind of just doing his work, so.
Okay. Well, I heard him say last week that he thought Illuminati got me.
Yeah. He was saying that. Chris, she was just saying that she heard you say last week because she watched the show afterwards, and you said you thought maybe the Illuminati got her.
Oh, well, you never know.
You were close.
These things.
Actually, very close. So here's what happened. Lori told me, okay, it was the bottom of the hour. There was going to be a break. So I said, okay. So I put the phone down, and I stepped outside the patio door and to let my dog out. And lo and behold, the patio door locked behind me.
Yes.
And the lock, actually, you have to put the lock up to lock it. Down is unlocked. So it wasn't loose. It didn't fall. Lori, you know, I posted pictures of the lock of the door on Facebook.
Yes, you did.
So I sat outside in my pajamas and my socks, freezing, mind you, for an hour until I used a neighbor's phone, and I couldn't remember for the life of me the number. And they were older. They didn't have a computer. I was freaking out. I think Satan locked me out because I think he was getting a little pissed off at me last week. What do you say?
Well, and, you know, he knew you were about to talk about creation, the true creation.
Yes. And we do have to get that I know you have another guest coming on, so I don't want to take up too much of their time. But here it goes. So okay. You just want me to get into it.
I do because, I mean, I'm squeezing you in because I want everybody to continue with you. You know what I mean? Last week we're like abruptly cut off. It was like a bummer and a half.
You can thank the devil himself for that one.
I'm not going to thank him for anything.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So the story of creation, the real story of creation. I don't believe in evolution. I don't believe that we came from monkeys, and neither should anybody else out there. You know that saying, if you come from monkeys, then why are there still monkeys?
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So anyway, everybody saw, well, mostly everybody saw the Planet of the Apes movie.
Mm-hmm.
In Planet of the Apes movie, the scribes and the elders held the secret to their civilization, right?
Right.
Our society is not much unlike the Planet of the Apes movie as far as the elders and the scribes knowing our secrets. And the elders and the scribes are the elitists, the Illuminati. We talked about them last week.
Right.
And they know everything. They know that they know the story. So here's how the story goes. 200 million years ago, Anu, A-N-U, which is, we call him God, came on Nibiru, came from on his planet Nibiru to Earth. Anu had two sons, Enki, E-N-K-I, and Enlil, E-N-L-I-L. Now, Anu didn't have a mother or a father. He's the supreme being. He's the creator of everything. Enki is the good son, and Enlil is the bad son. Okay. Now, they both come from God, but one is good. And you know what? Enlil is really not bad, but he just doesn't like humans. So here we go. Enki and Enlil were put in the Garden of Eden, which we know as the Garden of Eden. Man was created by Enki and Enlil in order to mine gold, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, gold, not because it's, you know, gold is, they don't look at it as far as material value. Remember what I told you last week, gold is an ingredient for Ormus, which activates DNA. So, Enki and Enlil created man through their DNA. Okay? And in order to mine gold. Now, that's what Enlil wanted. Enki loved humans. He loved man. He wanted man to be at his full potential. Like I said last week, he wanted man to walk on waters, to move mountains. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
However, Enlil wanted us as slaves. So God gave us a choice. Free, okay, he gave Adam, the first man who was created, he gave him a choice. If Adam would not have taken this choice of the spoils and temptations of Enlil, who is like the devil, okay, mm-hmm. If he didn't go in that direction and he stayed on Enki's side, which is like Jesus is a direct descendant of Enki, okay, so what happened was, God gave us a choice. Do you want to live this way or you want to live that way? Well, the first man decided to take the temptations of Earth, okay, and decided to go on the bad side. So we were created in the image and likeness of God 200 million years ago as man, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not as a monkey, not as anything else, as man. Time, every 3,600 years, Nibiru comes back around to Earth. The last time it was here, Nibiru was here, was 3,600 years ago during Moses' time. Nibiru is here now again. Okay? Nibiru is very close. This is why we are at the end of time. Because every 3,600 years prior to Moses was the flood of Noah. So God has been coming around to Earth every 3,600 years for 2 million years. And I'm sorry, 200 million years. And every time he comes around, he sees what's going on in the world and he normally doesn't like it. So he cleans things up. So this is no different than anything else in history. Yes, there will be another Earth and more people and, you know, a new civilization once he comes around this time. just like there was before, but a lot of us are going to experience, you know, utopia, like we talked about, you know, total utopia. So God, that is the real story of creation. Hold on 1 second, Lori. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Hold on 1 second. Do you know the story as I'm telling it, Lori? You know this story?
Well, okay. I know a lot of the story, but not the way you're telling it.
Yeah. And that's it. It's very plain and simple. Now, what happened is, as time went on, they kept experimenting with DNA. That's how our blood got mixed with reptilian. Last week you asked me why the Greys needed our DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because theirs is a dying race. Well, you have to understand, God created us. He created the Greys. He created the reptilians. He created everybody. And in our DNA is mixed with every single species that there is. We're all created from the same DNA. So that's why the aliens can use our DNA in order to continue their civilization, because we all have the same DNA, just the makeup is different, that we look different. You know, just like people have green eyes or blue eyes or brown eyes, that's a part of your DNA. So is you being looking like a lizard, looking like the little gray guy, or looking like a human. It's only one type of change in that DNA strand. So that's why every single being in the entire universe was created by God. So we all have each other's blood running through us, whether that be alien or God himself. Because remember, Enki and Enlil, his two sons, were our creators.
Now, do you think that everybody, like aliens or humans, I mean, do you think that the looks are different because of where, like, what planet they're from? Or why would you think that we have different looks, and why would we consider them aliens? And, you know, if we're all the same, why wouldn't we know we're the same?
Well, alien just means not from, like, you know, not from this world. Just like there's aliens that are not from the country. It doesn't mean that they're any different. They look differently, and it could be because that's how their world or their Earth, or whatever you want to call it, maybe the reptilians, maybe they have a hotter planet.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's differences. Like, if you were the supreme being, right, would you just create one thing and then go around in the universe and just create the same thing?
No, I wouldn't. And not only that, but look at how huge the universe is. I mean, it's infinite. And so it's like, to think like there's no other life seems a little bit limited. You know what I mean? There's too much evidence, too many people who have, you know, visits and everything else to think that we're the only ones. That's for sure.
Right. But I think we look different just because of you know, variety. I don't think, you know, God, he's a supreme being.
Well, why do you think that we were created to look like God and the other beings weren't, you know?
Look like God. No, we don't look anything like God.
Well, in the image of God, like you were saying, we were created in the image of God.
Right, in the image of God, meaning through his DNA. God is a light being. God is not substance. God lives in the ninth dimension. There are nine dimensions. If you use, say, remember I told you last week, if you only use 3% more of your DNA, you can move mountains, part waters, and be like God, like Jesus
right.
and Moses?
Yes.
If you use 100% of your DNA, you would be living in the ninth dimension, and you would be a light being.
Wow. And yeah, so how do you think people can start using more of their DNA?
Well, meditation, chakra work is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read your scriptures, read all the books that I told you about, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. Read Enoch. Enoch was extremely enlightened. Your DNA, you can only access that DNA by going inside your energy. You can't think of it as something that's in your mind, in other words. You can't reach into your mind and use more of your DNA. You have to reach into your light, into your energy, into your chakras. Once you open them up, that, I believe, is the secret. Now, I can't move mountains or part waters. I wish I could.
Yeah.
However, I do have a higher sensory perception. I have a psychic awareness. I have an awareness of energy when I hunt ghosts. Mm-hmm. I'm aware of the energy. So that's just an extra step of using more of my DNA. It's nothing about your mind. Your brain itself is only the computer that works this body. Once you tap into the energy that's inside your chakra points is when you can finally rise and use more of your DNA. I don't think people are looking at it in the correct way. They're thinking of it more as a human body thing, mm-hmm. but it's not.
Maybe they're using their mind more and their thoughts more than just the silence. Just like it says in the Bible, it says, be still. And, you know, and that's where you find God, you know, in the stillness and the quietness, you know, in the silence like that.
Meditate. That's what I mean. It's so important. It is so important. Prayer and meditation. And prayer isn't just, you know, Hail Mary, full of grace, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Patience, just sitting still, opening up your chakras, allowing the light and love of God. Because remember, we're a part of Him. So there's nine dimensions. And that's where I think a lot of the Bigfoot creatures come from. I think that they're interdimensional.
Me too.
You do?
Yeah, I do. You know, if you read any of the Missing 411 books with David Pilates, I mean, he doesn't come right out and say his exact opinion, but he does talk about different dimensions, and he does go to, like, Indian, you know, he's studied groups of Indians and all of their legends and stuff like that when it comes to Bigfoot, and he believes, he does mention dimensions and different, you know, portals and different things like that. And so I would say there's a lot of people who are basically kind of thinking the same thing when it comes to Bigfoot. I mean, that's why maybe nobody finds any bodies or anything like that.
Let's talk about now how God, okay, God, yes, God is an alien being. He is a supreme being. Let's talk about in the Bible how we can prove things like this. Mary, the mother of God, she was artificially inseminated, correct? It's the Immaculate Conception.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't immaculately conceived. There was no Immaculate Conception. She was taken up to God's spaceship because Nibiru wasn't here when Jesus was born, but his spaceship was, and that's what people think the Star of Bethlehem was God's spaceship. Because remember, their spaceships aren't like our ships. We're talking a mothership, like a huge mothership, like as big as, half the size of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Mary was taken up to God's spaceship, inseminated with the DNA of Enki, who is the good sun, and brought back down to Earth. It was not immaculate. She was artificially inseminated. Just like, you know, when people get abducted, that's what they do. They sometimes take, not inseminate them, but they take their eggs,
mm-hmm.
so that inseminate one, their own,
right.
You know, their own people. Here, take another thing. Jesus, when Jesus rose up to heaven, again, he rose as a physical body, and the apostles saw him going up to heaven. Jesus just went up to the spaceship and went back to Nibiru to live with his father. Moses, talked about Moses. Moses didn't go up to the mountain. Moses went up to Nibiru because at that point Nibiru was here. If you start looking and reading the Bible, thinking that God is an actual being, even though we can't touch him because he's a light being, and we could never in a million years in these bodies even begin to comprehend the sight of God.
Mm-hmm.
As a person, as a human being, we would only be able to recognize God and see God as light beings, but we're not that yet. You see what I mean?
Right.
So what God isn't, he's not physical. He lives in a ninth dimension. No time, no space. Everything is happening and kind of at the same time. Okay, I know you know a lot about, you know, time. There is no time and space in other dimensions.
Right.
So we would just be pretty much energy.
Just
light being.
Always,
right.
Always have been and always will be.
Exactly.
Now, we are coming to the end of our interview for as far as this goes. Now, do you want to say anything to everybody? Definitely I want to have you back, but I wanted definitely to get to this, you know, finish off a little bit of the segment, what we were looking forward to last week. I do want to have you on again. You're welcome to post anything you want on the dirt so that people can continue to look into this. I know you are definitely trying to change the lives of everybody that you can and also enlighten people. So is there anything you'd like to leave this show? Any thoughts you'd like to give to anybody?
No, I mean, there's only, I was listening to the rebroadcast and we were talking about the bloodline and the Rh negative blood. I just wanted to add one more thing that I left out about Rh negative people, which I know is very important. Rh negative people have an extra bone at the bottom of their spine.
Okay.
Sometimes people are born with it sticking out like a tail, which is really weird. And I know Chris last week, I heard him say maybe the bloodline is just, you know, those people are more in tune to leadership. Okay, yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. However, why would only 6% of the world be born with an extra bone on the base of their spine?
Good question. And it's definitely food for thought. And there is a lot of proof, and if anybody wants to look into that, they should definitely Google it, look into it. And also, you've posted a ton of things on there. So I just want to thank you so much, Elaine, for being on here tonight. And I'm sorry you got caught off last week and locked out, but it was a pleasure to have you back on. And I look forward to talking to you soon. Of course, we chat a lot more than just on the show, so I'll look forward to talking with you soon. And thank you so much for your time and for being here again this weekend on The Dirt. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lori. Love you.
I love you, too. And you have a great weekend, okay? And everybody else, please stay tuned for The Dirt. We're going to go to a commercial. We will be back with Betsy Lewis. And stay tuned. It's going to be great.
You are tuned to The Dirt. You are tuned to The Dirt.
Hi, everybody. You are welcome back to The Dirt. And I just want to thank Elaine D'Angelo one more time for being on the first part of the show. And she's a return guest, and it was a lot of fun to talk to her. It always is, and she'll be on again sometime soon. And right now, I just want to welcome our special guest, Betsy Lewis. Betsy, are you there with us?
Yes. Hi, Lori.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Great to be on your show tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for taking your time out of your Saturday night and your weekend to be here with us. I'm really looking forward to talking with you. You're actually the author of two books that we're going to discuss, and you can discuss as many as you like. I noticed that you have quite a few, but Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy, and then also Mystic Revelations of 13?
Right.
Oh, they Bye. Sound so interesting, and I want to say thank you so much for sending them, both me and my daughter, who is here with me today. We're both going to read them because we can't wait to hear what they're all about. So.
Oh, great, great.
Yes. So, let's see. We had a great conversation this afternoon. It was nice to get to know you a little bit, and all the things that I've read about you, you have many gifts and talents and writing, and you've been on talk show. You've just done so many things. So I guess what I'd like to do is just have you kind of introduce yourself the way you'd like to our listeners.
Oh, okay. Well, the paranormal has always been a part of my life. It began when I was 8 months old, and it was when my parents and I were on a country road in 1950, and we had a UFO encounter, and my life has been like that since I was eight, like I said, but I've had, excuse me, many dreams that come true. I've had many visions. I know when earthquakes are going to happen. I'm really in tune with the earth and what's going on, and also with what's going on with the sun. And lately, there's just been a lot of things going on with the sun right now. Yes. It was very quiet for a while, but now it's getting really active. And I think that has to do with some amazing prophecies that were given. And one of those prophecies happened to be a phantom in Portugal. And that happened in 1917. We can get into that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But I think I inherited my intuitive gift from my mother because she was very intuitive. In fact, she could astral project. She also remembered past lives. And she could teleport to places. People would say that they would see her, you know, miles away, which was incredible. So she had many of these talents, and I know that I inherited, you know, that gift of prophecy. And when you think about it, when I was very, very small, we would do telepathy games, and I would always tell her who was calling, you know, on the phone. And that's long before we had caller ID, and so I just always knew who was calling, which was pretty incredible.
So. But, is your mom the only one other than you that you know of in your family that has some of these gifts? I mean, do you have siblings or anything that possibly?
My sister had a little bit of it, but not to the extent that I seem to have it. And my daughter has it, too. She's had some things happen, too, E.T. experiences.
Well, it doesn't surprise
me. It does run in the family.
Well, it seems like people who have had, like, visitations or whatever, it does seem like it kind of runs down through their children, too. Like, they seem to I hear that a lot, like, where it seems like family members and it passes down and they get visited from aliens. And I wonder if it's something like a study or I really wouldn't know exactly what, but I've heard it numerous times.
That's so true that it does run through families. It's just amazing. There's just so many stories that I've read and very famous ones, too, that, you know, the whole family has been involved in E.T. encounters and abductions.
Yeah.
So that's so true. And they took a poll not too long ago, and 8 million people in the United States claim that they've had some kind of either UFO or alien encounter. So that's a
huge.
Lot of people. And that's just in the United States.
I know. That's absolutely huge. And it's funny how so many people want to, like, be in denial about it. And it's it's all over. I mean, even the government talks about there's, you know, all different things going on, and yet people want to make, I don't know if they want to be so afraid or if they want to be closed-minded to the idea that we're the only, you know, beings in the whole, you know, sky and the universe. It doesn't make any sense, you know?
It doesn't, Lori. No, you're so right. How could that be? I mean, how could we be alone
in
the whole universe? That's just, you know, unconsciionable.
I know.
There has to be other life. And certainly, you know, I feel that we've been lied to by the government and, you know, by other agencies. They know that there are aliens. There's just been too many UFO sightings, encounters, and, you know, there has to be something going on. And whether they have bases here on our planet, you know, of course, UFOs have been seen diving in the ocean and coming yes. out of water, and people claim that there are aliens in caves around the world, and there's just too many stories. So.
I agree with you. When you were only 18 months old, and was it 8 months or 18 months?
Eight
months. Okay. Mm-hmm. Was your sister in the car with you that time?
No, she wasn't born yet.
Okay. That's interesting.
No, she wasn't born yet. And it's kind of interesting. When I was very young, my mother used to tell me that I had two invisible playmates, and I would describe them, and they would tell me secrets, which is kind of interesting. I would describe them perfectly. So whether these were spirits, angels, I don't know. ETs, because I don't remember it. I guess I stopped seeing them a little after I was 3 years old.
Wow. That's wild. And so the second time you had an encounter that was, you called it actually kind of scary or frightful. What was the second encounter?
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should tell you more about the first one, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That would be great.
Then we'll go into the second one. The first one, like I said, happened in 1950, and my parents were attending the University of Moscow, Idaho, and they would visit my grandparents who lived in southern Idaho, Twin Falls. So it was quite a drive, like an eight-hour drive from northern Idaho, the panhandle, to southern Idaho to visit them, and they decided one October to, I think they left on a Friday, they decided to drive to Twin Falls to see my grandparents and other relatives, and I was 8 months old, so they put me in a little basket in the back of the car and drove, and it was getting late at night. They hadn't seen a car for miles, which was really strange, although there's ranchers around the area that they were traveling in, which is called the New Meadows area.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, they heard a roar, a horrendous roar. They thought a plane was going to crash on them. The car was vibrating so intensely that, you know, my father just slammed on the brakes, and they jumped out. This is what they remembered anyway, and
okay.
there was nothing in the sky, nothing around them.
That's
it just
so
stopped.
Weird.
Yeah, and that was the story that they had always told me,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they remembered. And then my uncle in 1981, 82 said, did you hear this story about your parents' UFO encounter? And I said, well, they heard this noise. He said, but did they tell you they lost 2 hours in time they couldn't account for?
Oh, no way.
I said, are you serious? He said, of course, I remember it so clearly. He said, it reminded me of the famous Betty and Barney Hill case, where they lost several hours in time they couldn't account for on a lonely road in 1961. At that time, I decided to contact MUFON or someone to find out if there was some way that my mother and I could be regressed through hypnosis. And that's when I called Bud Hopkins, who was well known in New York for regressing people, abductees. And he referred me to Ann Druffel in Los Angeles through MUFON. And we were living in Los Angeles at the time, and she decided to do a regression on us. So that was, really interesting. She did two separate hypnotic regressions on us. And then in 1957, when I was 7 years old, I was walking home from school. It was probably October again, somewhere September, October. I remember it was a cloudy day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of a strange day. I don't remember a lot of traffic on this one street that I usually walked along. And all of a sudden, I just felt something watching me.
and I looked up in the sky, and I saw this silver disk, this giant silver disk. And what's interesting about it is that it would increase and decrease in size, and it seemed to be following me. And I ran and hid in some bushes, and I was yelling out for someone to come and rescue me. And it was like no one was around on the street. It was like the whole area was deserted, which was really strange.
That is.
Yeah. And what I remember, and maybe it's a screen memory, because I know many UFO abductees, ET abductees, say that they are given some kind of screen memory about the incident. And what I remember is I ran in a different direction, and I start knocking on a door. I have no idea whose door I was knocking on, and no one answered. And I went inside this house, this strange house. And what I think happened is that I hid under the bed for a while, and I have no idea how long I was there. But when I finally got home, my mother was frantic. She had no idea where I'd been, and she thought, you know, the worst, you know.
Yeah, of course. Oh, my goodness.
I was kidnapped or something.
How long were you gone, did your mom ever say?
She said about an hour, and it usually took me 10, 15 minutes to get home. So, yeah.
And that's strange. So you're thinking that possibly you didn't even go into someone's house.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's what I remember about it. And we went outside. We both went outside to look around, and we looked up in the sky. There was nothing there. And later, maybe an hour later, I decided to walk around the neighborhood, and there was an elderly lady that said that other children in the neighborhood had seen something, and she thought, well, maybe it was something the government was testing, something the military had tested that day. But there was nothing in the news about it, which was strange.
That is. But, well, when you had your regression done for when you were younger with your mom, what happened? Like, what happened in the regression?
Well, Ann Druffel, who is famous for her investigation into UFOs and ET abductions, and she's written many books. And one of her books, which is called The Tujunga Canyon Contacts, that tells about abductions in California. But she decided to take our case and do the regression separately. My mom was the first one to be regressed, and I wasn't able to hear any of it because she just didn't want me to be influenced by what she said. But my mother was very frightened. She kept telling my father not to roll down the window, that there was something out there. She was afraid that something was going to take me, kidnap me. She said one minute there was a horse on the road, and the next minute it was gone. She thought there was a horse. And then she thought she saw a plane. But the fear in her voice that there was something really strange, and she said, she described the sound as like it would, she said it was kind of like somebody turned on a faucet. It was there. It was just, it didn't, you know, slowly, gradually build. It was just there.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept saying that she thought a plane was going to crash on them. And that's as far as she went with her regression. But, of course, I went a little bit further with mine.
Good.
And I described beings with big heads that actually abducted us, that we were like beamed up into this brilliant red light into a spacecraft where we were examined. And I remember my mother was in like a tube type, I don't know how to describe it, but it was just like a tube, a clear tube.
Okay.
And she kept yelling out for me. She couldn't get to me or move. And the floor was clear. I could see my father was down below. And that's what I remembered, which is, you know, who knows if what I've read through the years might have influenced what I told during hypnosis. I'm not sure, but
how old
I still don't know. But I think there is something to it because shortly after my second UFO encounter, that's when I started having these earth dreams. They were of horrendous earth changes. I kept seeing earthquakes, feeling earthquakes. I would see volcanoes erupting. I was standing on the shore, and I could see these huge waves, like tsunami-type waves, coming in. So I felt that that was going to happen later in my life. And I feel right now that we are getting into those times with all the crazy things that are going on with our world right now.
Exactly. There are a lot of those things happening.
Isn't there? I know.
One of the things I was going to ask you is, what age, you probably said it, and so I apologize for asking again. What age were you when you did the regression?
Oh, I was, that was in my 30s.
Okay, and your mom, did you then share with each other, obviously, if you know what she said, but, I mean, after you were done, when you were talking, did it trigger any sort of additional memory for her at all?
She just kept saying that she had nightmares after the whole event when they got back.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept dreaming that someone had taken me, and that's all she remembered.
What about your dad?
My dad was really strange. You know, we had talked about ETs, extraterrestrials, and he believed that they existed, and he believed in UFOs. We had talked about that. But when it came to this incident, he didn't want to talk about it. He was just really strange, and he didn't want to be regressed. He absolutely refused to be regressed.
Maybe he remembered it.
Well, I don't know. That was the strange thing about that.
Yeah, that is. And so you say, like, from that point on, you've had, and I know I do have, you know, a questionnaire and a list. So if you know, anytime you want to get back to that, just let me know. But you said that you, throughout your life, have had more alien encounters. And so, I mean, look at it. It starts as your earliest recollection of it is 8 months. But, I mean, and then you're 7. And then after that, anything specific as these events or not really?
Yeah, there's been some very strange things. We lived in a house in Twin Falls that was a newly built house. It was built in 1957, 58, and that house was really strange. It had a lot of poltergeist activity in it.
Okay.
And I remember that we'd be down in the basement, and we could hear, like, someone with heavy footsteps walking across the living room, and we'd run upstairs and there would be nothing there, and we heard noises. It was just really freaky.
Mm-hmm.
Things would disappear in the house, and one night I woke up and I saw this gauzy form of a human, a man I think it was, standing by my bed. And of course I was so frightened I couldn't yell out, I couldn't do anything. I just pulled the covers over my head and kept wishing it was morning.
Yeah, I mean, that would be so scary, you know.
Right. And I can think of one other incident that I've had a lot of different things like that where I've had dreams of aliens. I used to have a lot of dreams of great big spaceships landing in our neighborhood, and I would be getting on board a UFO. But one that comes to mind happened in the mid-1990s.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a friend, and we went to a hot springs here in Idaho. And it was getting kind of late, so we headed back to his SUV, and we decided to camp out around there. And we went to all the campsites, and they were all filled. So we just drove to this other little spot. It was kind of secluded. We backed into this area, and behind us, we could tell that there was a lot of brush and there were some trees that had fallen over, and we got our sleeping bags out and just fell into a deep sleep. And suddenly I woke sometime in the middle of the night, and I heard these voices just rushing past us. And the voices weren't, you know, like I couldn't understand what they were saying. It wasn't in English, whatever it was. It was just really weird. And I got the strangest feeling, and I kept trying to get up. I felt like I was paralyzed.
Weird.
And I know, and he was like that, too. He couldn't get up. And we're just, you know, hearing this, and suddenly, you know, we were able to get up, and I got the flashlight out and turned around to see, and there was no one there with the flashlight, and there's no way that anybody could run behind the, you know, behind us because of all the brush and the trees. They would have tripped and fell.
Right.
So I don't know, but he was totally freaked out. He said, let's get out of here. Something's going on, and we did. We left.
Well, I mean, what's kind of cool is that you both experienced it.
Right, right.
You know, and that always, even if it is weird and you can't explain it, it's always nice when somebody else has the same experience so you know it happened.
Right, right, exactly.
Well, yeah. Okay, so as far as now the alien experiences, and we are getting close to the top of the hour with, and we'll be going to a break with the Fox News and everything, but I really wanted to, you know, start hearing a little bit about some of your books, too, because there's so much to cover and not very much time. I realize that, but the book Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy, too.
Right.
I really, is it Prophecy 2 and Alexander Phoenix? That's the one?
Well, there, Alexander Phoenix is more like a Jonathan Siegel type book.
Okay.
It's a fictional book for adults.
Okay.
Older children and adults. But the Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy 2, that's about time travel, about hybrids. I get into cattle mutilations that I used to investigate.
Nice.
It gets into a lot of different things, my visions, prophecies, and then mystic revelations of 13. I have found all these incredibly strange things about 13 that
yes.
are just going to blow you away.
I want to hear about that, too. So which one do you want to talk about first when we come back?
What sounds good to you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, we're kind of talking about the aliens and everything right now, so I'm thinking
okay.
we should go with the Angels, Aliens,
okay.
and Prophecy, too. And on here, like, your book, as far as it goes, now, a lot of this is personal experience and then also people, like, that you've interviewed or how did you put this book together? What information?
Well, it's so much of what I've believed and what I've investigated all through the years about ancient aliens. It goes back to the Bible and Ezekiel and what I've found, and of course cave drawings, and there's even evidence of atomic or nuclear power that was used ancient times, that something that was found in our deserts all over the world. So we can talk about that.
That sounds great. I am really looking forward to this. And I just,
thank
again,
you.
Want to thank you so much. And so if anybody is listening out there and you'd like to call in and ask Betsy any questions or if you have any comments, definitely feel free to call in at 530-742-5555, and we'd be happy to take your call. So we're going to actually head to a break, and then when we come back, we're going to, you know, investigate this book with her, Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy 2. So everybody stay tuned for The Dirt.
You're tuned to The Dirt.
A large number of perfectly sane and reliable people have been involved in this flying saucer business. We have been collecting material on flying saucer observation, checking, cross-checking, trying to track down leads, no matter how far afield they took us. This, tonight, is our report. We are going to bring you the facts at hand. What they add up to, well, that's for you to decide. That's up to you.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schulz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and we are going on to our second hour of the show, and I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I also want to thank Elaine D'Angelo for being on the first part of our show, and now we have Betsy Lewis, who has been just wonderful over the last, half hour so far, but we've got a little bit less than an hour to go and so much to cover. Betsy, are you still there with us?
I'm still here.
Yay. Good. We're always happy to hear that. I don't know if you're watching it at all, but I put a little alien guy prop on here on my microphone.
No, I see you on there, but I don't see that.
Oh, can you look at, you can't see the microphone?
Yeah, I can see the microphone. Yeah, there it is.
There he is. See?
Oh, very cute.
Yep, my brother gave it to me. He's like, use it as a prop. So all of a sudden I just found it in my purse and I was like, oh my goodness, I almost forgot our alien friend. So, so we were actually going to start talking about your book, Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy 2, and just basically how you put that together. What made you decide to write a book?
You know, I've always thought about that, and I've just had all these things about time travel in my mind. I've felt like I've been told many, many things, and I just had to put it down, all the things that I've read, all the things I understand, just intuitively understand. So that's why I wrote about these things. And, of course, my mother and I had talked about Ezekiel in the Bible and how it seems to describe modern-day astronauts in there. And that was, you know, we were talking about that in the 50s.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that I've always known about, that we've always been visited. And whether they're from our future, whether they are from another dimension, they're extraterrestrials, I don't know.
Right.
But we have been visited.
Absolutely. And I wanted to also ask you, is this your first book that you've written? Or what was your first book?
Okay. The first one was Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy, The Connection. And that book is been discontinued. So I picked up with Prophecy 2, Angels, Aliens, and Prophecy 2, The Alien, Angel-Alien Agenda. And I put so much more in there. I updated the prophecies, and it has so much more in it. A lot more pages, too.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. And I'm so excited. And again, thank you for sending me the book because, like I said, we're totally going to enjoy it. And are you planning on writing anything else?
Right now I'm working on a book about honoring Mother Earth and Earth energy. I spent like 10 years during the 90s with Native Americans, and I've learned so, so much about honoring Earth. And I've always felt really connected to Earth because my parents loved to go camping. We spent a lot of time in northern Nevada where my dad did a lot of mining.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, I've just always connected to animals, and I just have this reverence for planet Earth. And right now I think our planet is dying, and we have to rethink what we're doing. And a lot of ceremonies are going to be in the book, and just connecting what all the elements mean, and just some really interesting mystical stuff in there.
It sounds wonderful, and it's right up the dirt's alley. That's all I have to say. Like, this is the kind of stuff I love getting into. So, let's see. Boy, where do we start with your book? Like, what would you like to start talking about first? I mean, I kind of want to go with the alien and angel connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, of course, in biblical times, what they were seeing may have been actually aliens. And I talk about that with Ezekiel, the prophet Ezekiel, which is in the Old Testament. And some of the strange things that he was talking about, he had to use his vernacular at the time what he was trying to describe. Of course, he didn't know about astronauts and aircraft and things like that. So what he said was he saw a whirlwind that came out of the north, a great cloud of fire enfolding itself. And then he talks about creatures. He said there were four living creatures, and they had the likeness of man. And each one had four faces, four wings, and their feet were straight feet, their soles of their feet were like a calf's foot, and they sparkled like the color of burnished brass. Now,
Wow. Does
that sound like an angel to you?
Yeah, I know. And there's so many other things, too, like when you read the Bible, too, as far as just besides this small reference. I mean, that's just one of many. But one of them, too, that always, you know, makes me kind of think about giants and everything else are just, you know, David and Goliath. I mean, nobody ever second guesses why is there a giant in there, you know?
Oh, I know. I've always been fascinated with giants, and I think they did exist.
Me too.
And we've heard about all these discoveries. In fact, I just received information about a book that just came out about the Smithsonian having these giant skeletons that they are, you know, they just don't want us to know about. And I've heard about other discoveries in the United States where they have found these giant skeletons. So, yeah, I think that's all possible. And I think many things that we've been told about our past isn't correct. Our ancient history is so much more involved, and so many things that have happened.
Exactly. And in the Bible, too, I mean, it does tell us. It's just that I think our interpretations have been wrong. And then all of a sudden, when we do make a discovery, we're like, wait a second, we were reading this over and over and over and over in Bible study, and we never put it together that, wow, Goliath was actually a giant, maybe among
right.
other giants.
Right, right.
You know,
yeah.
So, so your yeah. angels now, have you had any personal experiences or accounts with angels that you would separate and think that they are different than aliens? Or are you trying to say that you think they're one and the same?
Well, I think in some instances, people have been visited by aliens that, you know, portray themselves as like the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I'll get into that pretty soon, too, why I think that, and also angels, and I think these are celestial beings. I don't know if they're per se angels, but they are advanced beings, and they seem to know how to read our thoughts, and they know about our future, too, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
But I've had experiences where I've been warned about events, and I feel very blessed that many of these things I've been warned about, you know, saved my life.
Really? Do you want to give us an example of that?
Sure. I'd love to.
Well, thank you.
My husband and I, when we were going to get married, we've been together 11 years now, and we were headed to Tahoe to get married. We had a friend with us, and we were taking a road which wasn't right through Nevada. In fact, we decided to go. It goes down kind of through Oregon, and I can't think of what highway, but it's just a really kind of two-lane highway.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no place to turn around. There's a lot of traffic on it. And I was driving. Something told me that I needed to drive, you know, before mm-hmm. I let my husband take over later in the trip. But we were going along, and I see a car coming at us. And all of a sudden, I see that car start veering over in our lane. And something just told me, I was so calm about it. I knew he was going to hit us head on. I just felt that. But something told me to get over as far as I could, take my foot off the brake, and my husband said, this car missed us by just a fraction of an inch.
Wow.
But something told me that something was going to happen. And we watched this car. This is what was really, really weird about this event. This car went down the wrong side of the road, and out of view. There was no way that we could call anyone because we were out of cellular
range.
Range. And, you know, there was no way that we could turn around. And the car wasn't weaving, which was strange. If it was someone drunk, they would have been weaving.
True.
And they just continued down the wrong side of the road, and I thought, oh, dear God, someone is going to get hit head on, you know?
Yeah.
And finally, when we did get into Reno, I called the little town, the next town that they were headed for, and I said, was there a head-on collision? And the woman goes, no. What are you talking about? And I told her what happened. So I don't know. It was just very strange.
Boy, that is lucky that you did that. And, you know, a lot of times mm-hmm. I've heard of stories where actually somebody can't understand how, like, a collision didn't take place or how they
right.
were safely removed from the car and sitting on the side mm-hmm. of the road and different
exactly.
things like that. Like, they've been, like, actual interventions of, like, saving someone's life.
Right.
During those moments. Wow, that's a cool one. Did you have any other ones, or was that basically the
big
one?
Oh, no, lots of them.
Okay.
I'll give you another instance. With earth movement and earth changes and earthquakes, I get a lot of warnings about earthquakes. But I was living in Los Angeles in 1971, and for three nights in a row, I had a dream of a huge earthquake in my dream. And in the dream, I was always all right. But the morning that the earthquake hit in Los Angeles, I was up early. I worked for a brokerage firm at the time, and I was dressed and ready when it hit about 6 o'clock in the morning. And like the whole apartment building I was in was swaying back and forth.
Wow.
And I kept thinking about an earthquake that had hit, I think, somewhere in South America, where everything collapsed. And I kept thinking, I've got to get out of here. And I couldn't even get out the door. It was swaying so bad. But, of course, I was fine. But I had been warned.
So what do you do when you get warnings now? Like, have you changed the way that you make decisions based on your warnings now? Or before, did you just go, wow, that was coincidental, or wow, I can't believe it happened, and now you're more aware when it's happening?
Yeah, I am a lot more aware, and sometimes I'm warned even about people. You know, like I got involved in a business venture in Sun Valley, Idaho, with some people. And something kept telling me not to get involved, and I kind of had this, you know, just this feeling, this gut feeling, like my stomach would just tighten and hurt, and I knew that I was being told, don't get involved with these people in this venture, and of course, I didn't want to believe it, and sure enough, you know, it was a disaster, and I should have listened, but, you know, I listened to that little voice, and a lot of times I do hear voices early in the morning that call out my name, and finally I had to tell them, you know, if you don't have something to tell me, you know, stop it.
That's funny. You know, you're like, just don't yell my name for something to do.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing that was just amazing. My sister became very ill. She passed away in 2003.
I'm sorry.
And before that, she and her husband moved to Argentina. He was from Argentina. And I knew that she was very ill. I didn't know how ill.
Mm-hmm.
But just about 2 weeks before she passed away, I heard my father talk to me and wake me up, just call my name, Betsy. And I thought, he's telling me he's going to be with her. And I kept telling my sister, I would call her in Argentina and tell her, you know, Dad's around you. She was very close to my father. And what's really strange is she passed away on his birthday.
Aww.
So I know he was there.
That is really special and
very
sweet.
Yeah, I knew. So, you know, I've always felt loved ones around me. I've had that connection. They've, you know, communicated to me through dreams or little things that happen. And I know we were talking about that earlier. When my mother passed away, I felt like there was someone stroking my face with a feather.
Yeah.
And they say that's when, you know, someone is trying to communicate with you. And I felt that for such a long time.
And because I was Josie's sitting here, so I'm going to explain a little of our conversation. I did tell her that we spoke, but remember the other day I kept feeling like my nose was tickling all day long. I kept feeling like that. And Betsy actually told me, she's like, that's a loved one trying to communicate with you, like probably Timmy, you know, is what I would think. But like one day it just kept happening all day long. I was like, do I have like a hair sitting on top of my nose? Not like in it, everybody, but like on top of it or something, because it would not stop just feeling tickled constantly.
I know.
All day.
I guess they're trying to get our attention, you know. They maybe use a little feather to tickle our nose or tickle our face. And
I know.
I'm here.
I know. And Josie's friend actually was telling her, too, like, she was watching something, and it just was reminding her of our family. Like, sometimes when we're still mourning or grieving so hard, like, he's probably right near us just saying, I am right here. If only you would just listen to all the signs, because so many people have told us things, or that they felt his presence or different things or seen him. And you know, for us to be like crying like he's never around or he's completely gone, maybe he doesn't want us to feel like that.
Right, right. Have you ever watched Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium?
Yes, we have seen her.
Isn't she amazing?
She is amazing. She's very nice, too, about, mm-hmm. like, all the, you know, visits she has from the other side and how she's compassionate about, like, carrying messages to people. She seems, and what was that, Jesse?
Not evil messages.
Yeah, not evil messages. She just is, like, careful to always a positive message, you know?
Right, right, yes. And she's very funny, too.
She is
She's
funny.
A character, isn't she?
She really is, because I think she's so used to, like, the way her life is.
Right.
That for us, and I have a few friends that are psychic, and one in particular that I actually co-host on her show is Vicky Emanuel, and she actually is so funny too, because for her it's just like me looking at Josie, or you know what I mean? Like, it's so mm-hmm. a part of their life, and I just think that they're just like, okay, I hear you, yes, I see you. Like, it just seems so normal to them, and it's not, like, to all of us, it's such a mystery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, you were saying, too, like, okay, so your messages and everything else, but what about, now you said you found connections and you told us some examples in the Bible, and then what about the nuclear weapon?
Oh, yeah, right. That's what's really interesting. All around the world, in some of the major deserts around the world, they have found this mysterious green fused glass. It's been found in the Mojave Desert of Southern California, in Arizona, Colorado, Africa, Egypt, and in the ancient site of Babylon. And meteorologists claim lightning striking sand will not produce anything like that. It produces just small root-like pattern objects called fulgurites.
Okay.
But what's interesting is that this green glass, these sheets of green glass, there's no craters around to explain it. There's no volcanoes to explain the green glass. And what's really interesting is that later, this was in 19, let's see, that was in the early 40s, when they were testing atomic explosions
mm-hmm.
In New Mexico. Well, that produced the same kind of green glass. And so they start thinking, you know, what's going on here? Maybe there is something that shows that, you know, someone was doing explosions during that time. So what would cause that, you know, besides an atomic blast?
And where do you think these blasts were coming from? Do you think that they're coming from, like, aliens, or do you think we at one point had knowledge of something and then we somehow lost it?
Well, you know, many people believe in Atlantis, that it was an advanced technology civilization that mm-hmm. existed, and they had many of these things, and maybe they were helped with alien technology, too. But they supposedly had the mighty crystal, which Edgar Cayce talked about, the great and mighty crystal. And they had airships. They had submarines, supposedly. And, you know, a lot of these things that are seen from the air, like in Peru, the Nazca planes, you've heard about that,
yes.
Where these giant figures are seen only from the air. And I believe that, you know, of course, they had some kind of flying crafts that they were using. And, of course, they have found things in Egypt, too, that are wall carvings. Dendera is another place that you can see what looks like a submarine etched, you know, in ancient Egypt, you know, drawings. Mm-hmm. And there's something that looks like a helicopter. And there's another place where they have what looks like a giant light bulb, some kind of lighting. And what's really interesting, they've never found any smoke mentioned smoke to show how the Egyptians actually could see inside these dark pyramids.
Yeah, I think that's weird too. You know, they find all these pyramids, and yet, how were they drawing all this stuff?
Exactly. How were they?
Yeah.
Did they have some kind of lighting? And of course, there's a lot of thing they call them uparts, that they're out of, they're just out of sync with some of these things that they've found through the centuries. They call one the Baghdad battery. It is a battery, a crude battery, but somehow someone invented a battery way back in ancient times. So there's just a lot of things. In fact, there's wall carvings that they have found, cave drawings that show alien-like beings, astronauts, and modern aircraft. There are ancient Indian texts that go back to Vedic literature that shows flying chariots. There's Sanskrit books that talk about chariots that were powered by winged lightning.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you know, when you think about, we're talking about the Bible, when you think about the story of Lot and his family escaping Sodom and Gomorrah, was that a nuclear or atomic explosion? Is that why the aliens or the angels were warning them to get out by a certain time, that, and they had to find so many people to save the city, righteous people? You know, what was that?
I know, that's so true. And then you also wonder, too, if some of these drawings were possibly also visions or different things that were given to them, too. So it's hard to say which technology they actually had and which they didn't.
Right, right.
And there seems to be, like, this age of, like, there where there was a lot of advanced information that was known to, you know, that era of people. And then all of a sudden, why did it go back to, like, no technology? You know, it's weird. And a lot of their drawings, too, they actually show, like, people going up into clouds. Now, and with, like, beams of light all around them. Why would they be doing that? Like, where would they get that idea, you know?
Right, right, exactly.
And I think it's interesting that they also drew the pictures, you know, like that, so that it was going to be able to be communicated, you know, through all of us, too, that they knew of these things.
Right, right, exactly. And there are a couple of huge drawings in the, I guess that's in the desert, the Mojave Desert.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Mojave Twins, but it looks just like aliens.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Native Americans have always known about extraterrestrials, and they are still having encounters, a lot of them.
Well, what about, you were saying about some crop circles, too.
Oh, crop circles, yes. Interesting. I've studied a little bit about those. There's been some really, really strange crop circles that have been seen through the years. And one of them, I have to go back here a little bit just to give you the date of one of them that was probably one of the strangest and largest ones that was ever seen. Get that.
And I think it's interesting that they would actually use, you know, like our fields and all that to do design. So you wonder if it's more for them or if it's for us at all or if it's mostly just for them, some directional like mapping type thing.
Well, there's one woman that claims she's in touch with the Zetas, Nancy Leader, who says that the Zetas have been doing the crop circles and they're telling us about Planet X and how it's coming into our solar system now, and that's why we're having all these huge Earth changes. And, of course, all the other planets out there are going through massive changes, too, right now.
Mm-hmm. And we do have that asteroid that's going to be going through, and they say
right.
that it is going to change. It could change the surface of Earth so much, and it's weird that's not being talked about very much by scientists or warning us of any of the changes that could take place, and it's just right around the corner.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, there's just so much going on. But, yeah, the crop circles are just incredible.
Do you think that more people are becoming intuitive?
Oh, I do. I think the new children have arrived. And I was talking about the new children to a friend and on Facebook. I don't know if you've seen that information, but I had the chance to interview a prodigy, a child prodigy, who is a very famous artist, Akiana Kamerick, and she remembered the angels talking to her when she was very young. She would tell her mother that she knew who God was and that her true parents were on the other side. And, of course, her parents were agnostic. They really didn't believe in anything. And she started talking about God and Jesus and angels, and she could hear the music. In fact, she told her mother that she couldn't stand to listen to music, our music, because it hurt her ears. The music on the other side is so beautiful. And the colors, she said. And she started drawing, like, at three, age four. And her paintings, she started getting into paintings. And her paintings are just incredible.
Where was she from?
She's from Europe. I can't remember what part of Europe. But she lives in northern Idaho with her parents now. She's 23, I believe, now.
Wow, that is so cool.
But she's been on Oprah, and she's been on all these huge talk shows. She's known worldwide, but she's one of the new children.
Is she considered a rainbow?
I would think so. I don't know. You know, it gets kind of nebulous when you get into all these different crystal children, indigo, rainbow children, star children. They're just the new children, I call them. And they're so advanced. They remember past lives. They talk to spirits. They're intuitive. They just have all these special gifts. They're just amazing.
And do they feel that they're different than, let's say, just other people that don't have these gifts? Can they tell the difference of themselves versus everybody else? Or do they feel they're just like us but just gifted?
You know, Akiana, you know, she said as time has gone by, she remembered so much of that other side, that other dimension where she existed with them, I guess. And as time has gone by, a lot of it has become faded for her. And she lives pretty much a regular life now. Mm-hmm. Her parents did homeschool her, but, you know, she's become such a celebrity that she's just the sweetest girl in the whole world.
Wow. And does she... So she remembers her family from the other side. Does she have any of her other family members? Has anybody else come here that she knows here that was also there?
No, not really.
Okay.
No. Not as far as I know. Her parents now believe, you know, in Jesus and God, and they've totally changed their religious views. But she had an interesting event happen. She wanted to paint the face of Jesus, and she kept asking, you know, how can I paint your face? I haven't seen your face. And what's really interesting, one day someone knocked on their door, and she went to the door, and here was this tall man standing there, and he was a carpenter. And she said, oh, my gosh, you are the face I've been looking for.
Wow.
And she said that's what the face of Jesus looked like. And he happened to be a carpenter. Isn't that coincidental?
Yes. And so did she paint that face?
Yes, she did. It's beautiful.
I'm going to have to Google that. Do you have it on your Facebook page?
I have one of hers. I don't have the face of Jesus.
Okay.
I put the one of the little child that she has, a little Asian girl on there. And the background is kind of like lightning in the back.
Wow, that's so neat.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I love it.
Beautiful.
And
I
so,
love the new children. And, you know, they have so much to teach us. I know a lot of people that have parents just don't understand them because they're so determined and they just know what they want. You know?
Yeah. And do you think that these new children, like, what do you think they're... Why are they new? Like, what's new about them? Like, where are they from? What's the difference between them and the old children?
Higher vibration.
Okay.
They're vibrating at a higher rate than other children. You know, a lot of us, you know, like you, I'm sure, you know, you are, would be considered one of the new children, but you're not a child anymore. But, you know, these children have a higher vibration. They are the evolution of humans. And I think we're all headed that way.
Do you think it's more of a loving evolution?
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
A more loving evolution of existence in
our future? I think so. I think that's where we're headed. I think that we've had a lot of extraterrestrial help, too. I think that they're involved with a lot of the hybrid experiments, and I think there are hybrid children out there, part alien, human.
I think so, too. Did you happen to run across your the crop circle information?
You know, I think it was...
I think we got distracted from that, but that's okay.
Yeah, hold on just a minute. Let me... it's in my new book and not in my old book.
So oh, that's okay.
Yeah, got...
So while you're looking at that, it says in your book you write about an Indian guide who claimed his grandfather discovered a mile-long, what is it, labyrinth of caves beneath Death Valley floor?
Oh, labyrinth.
Labyrinth.
Boy, yes, isn't that interesting?
That's awesome. That's some great grammar I've got going on. So what's going on with that?
Now, which one do you want me to talk about?
Well, let's see. Well, this would be great. I mean, everybody... I don't know. I know you were saying the crop circle led to also some events that took place. Is that the one that you were looking up right now?
Well, the crop circles are mostly in England that have taken place.
Okay.
And there was one that had an alien face that showed up with some kind of disc next to it. Here it is. It's called the Arecibo crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that appeared on August 15th, 2002.
Wow.
And what really stunned everybody was that it was a giant gray ET face.
That's...
And there was a giant disc next to it with in a binary code. And when they deciphered this code, what it said is, "Beware of bearers of false gifts and their broken promises. Much pain, but still time. Believe there is still good out there. We oppose deception. Conduit closing." Isn't that strange?
Yes, very strange. What right. do you think of that?
I don't know. You know, what I think is, I think what they're talking about is the family of dark, if you want to call them the Illuminati, the elite.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're out there, and they have an agenda for us. It's a dark agenda, I think. Right now, we're feeling a lot of that going on. They're involved with dark occult things, and they're the ones, they're the deceivers.
The 13, the number 13 that you
exactly.
were referring to?
Right.
Well, how about let's get over to the number 13. I know
okay.
I'm jumping all over. It's just I wish you were on here for six more hours.
To talk about it.
I know.
Yeah.
So since you brought it up.
I'm interested in numerology. And what I have found that numbers have power. And it's interesting that the Greek philosopher and mathematician Pythagoras, who lived from 580 to 500 BCE, believed numbers rule all things. He also believed that numbers had souls and held magical powers. And he divided numbers into two groups, odd and even, male and female, light and dark. And I believe that too. And 13 is a very strange number.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of things that have been associated with it. And, you know, I've just found so many things. This is really interesting. It goes back to the Illuminati, and it has to do with, like, the Sandy Hook shootings. Remember when that happened, December 14th of
yes.
last year?
Yes.
When you total those numbers, it equals 13. Now, maybe that's a coincidence. Somebody will say, well, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence.
I don't think it even
really
happened.
But how about the Naval Shipyard shootings that happened on September 16th of this year? Mm-hmm. You total 9, 16, 20, 13. It equals 13.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a coincidence.
Maybe it is, maybe not, but wait until I tell you some of these other things. Now, I get into some of the things that have been happening with the solar event. We've also got a grid preparedness drill for survival on November 13th. And the Pope, our new Pope, right?
Mm-hmm.
The new Vatican's Pope, he was elected on March 13th of this year, 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those numbers equal 13. He should be called Pope 13. He has taken the name of Francis of Assisi, the 13th century saint.
Huh.
He is 76 years old, which is 13, right?
That is so
and,
weird.
And let's see, he is also, he was ordained into the priesthood on December 13th of 1969. Do you think that's coincidence?
No, I don't. I don't think any of these things are.
I know, I don't think so either. There's too many things about 13. And, of course, you know, I'm not saying he's evil, because he doesn't seem to be, but he might surprise us and start doing some very strange things. But I think 13, like I said, is a power number. It can be both used for dark purposes, and it can be used for light purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is we're going to go back to 1917 when the three children of Fatima of Portugal. Are you familiar with that story?
No.
Okay. On May 13th, excuse me. On May 13th of 1917, three children of Fatima of Portugal were herding their sheep in a field, and a beautiful lady came to them, appeared to them, and hovered over a tree and started telling them to pray, and she started giving them prophecies. And then she told them that she was going to appear to them on the 13th day for 6 consecutive months at solar noon. So from May 13th, 1917, through October 13th, 1917, she appeared to the three children. And what's interesting about that is that on the final day, October 13th, she said that she was going to perform a miracle. And a lot of times during her visitations on the 13th of those months, there were strange things that were seen. There were color displays. There were just incredible color displays. There were sounds, booms heard whenever she appeared. She would always float in from the east and depart to the east. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a giant orb would be seen. The people that started gathering there couldn't see her, but they would see all these other events. But on October 13th, she promised them an incredible event. And close to 70 to 80,000 people appeared or, you know, came to Fatima to witness whatever was going to happen. And it had been pouring rain all day. All morning anyway, and people were standing in the mud, drenched. And then at solar noon, the clouds parted, and they could see what looked like the sun come down from the sky. It looked like it was going to fall from the sky and just hit them. It started turning. They said, but what's really strange is they didn't describe what looked like a sun. Many of the descriptions said that what they were seeing looked like a silver disc. It had a sharp edge. It that sounds more like a huge UFO to me.
I know, it really does.
Yeah. And
some sort of vehicle.
It lasted for some time. And what's really interesting that, you know, they had been standing in mud, all these people drenched, and suddenly the sun just went right back up into the sky, and they were all dry.
Wow.
There was no evidence that it had been raining all morning and they were soaked and the There was no more mud. The ground was dry. And what's interesting, not one astronomer in the world noted anything unusual about the sun. This event was only seen by people within a radius of, I think, like 15 miles.
And I think that's weird, too. Like, a lot of the things that happen, it's never noted. And I don't understand that.
I know.
That's so strange. Boy, that's a really cool event.
Well, it was. And, you know, and what's really strange is that the children, she gave many prophecies to the children, which they were supposed to release. And they say the Vatican hasn't released that third prophecy, which is so dire that, you know, they say they won't release. But what's interesting is she told the children that the two younger children would not live, and they died of the Spanish flu, which was raging then. I think close to 50 to 100 million people died from the Spanish flu during that time. And Lucia was the oldest child,
mm-hmm.
and she lived. She became a cloistered Carmelite nun. And she died February 13th of 2005 at the age of 97. Now, isn't that interesting?
Okay.
February 13th.
Okay, that's so odd. And the thing is, why didn't she ever share that third prophecy?
Well, I think that's why they kept her cloistered.
Okay.
You know, that they just didn't want her giving any interviews or anything else. She never did come out of her, you know, where she was living. She wasn't able to give any type of interviews. And in 1927, Jesus supposedly came to Lucia in a tabernacle and wanted her to divulge the secret and that was given to her on July of 1917. And she, the Lady of Fatima, which she called herself, she told them that there was going to be five scourges that were going to take place on earth. And she said, when you see the night illuminated by an unknown light, know that there is a great sign that God is giving you that he is going to punish the world for its crimes by means of war. And the sign did come. It was on the night of January 25th, 1938, when all of Europe and part of North America were lighted by an extraordinarily brilliant display of Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights. And I guess that it was just incredible. In fact, in England, they thought the city was on fire. It was so brilliant red. It
wow.
was just incredible red.
That is incredible.
Yeah. But I've kind of put together that I think the lady was warning us about a solar event coming, and I've always felt that something was going to happen with our sun. And right now, and what's really interesting this year, on May 13th of this year, guess mm-hmm. what happened?
Hmm.
We had four major X-class flares, and that's the first date that the lady came to the children. Now, isn't that weird?
That is weird.
And, just recently, NASA's been talking about the sun is going to flip its poles, its magnetic poles, and it's supposed to happen sometime within this month or next month. And I'm wondering if something's going to happen around the 13th. And, of course, we've already had a few X-class flares. For a while, the sun was just flatlining.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing going on. And then suddenly, the sun came awake around the 13th of October. And now we've had about three X-class flares, and we're currently in an M-class flare. But isn't it interesting that our government, Mexico, Canada, and about 150 companies are going to do this preparedness drill in case our, you know, the grid, the electrical grid goes down on November 13th and 14th.
I know. I think that's really weird, too. And, I mean, everybody knows that there's, like, an energy shift that's supposed to
mm-hmm.
be taking place. And
right.
There are a few people who have been studying how there's recent explosions and everything else taking place on the sun, you know?
Right.
And it
right.
was quiet for a while. And of course, it affects like earthquakes. It affects all of that, all the activity. They think that the sun and the explosions have a lot more to do with earthquakes than we ever knew before.
Oh, I watch it all the time. I predict them. You know, whenever we get these solar flares and we get a coronal mass ejection from the sun and it's aimed at Earth or even a glancing blow, we get some big earthquakes. And we've already had some big earthquakes, Peru and usually the South Pacific has had some big ones. And of course, Japan just had, I think it was a 6.7 point earthquake not too long ago near Fukushima. So, yeah, there's a lot going on right now. And, you know, I think we've been warned many, many times. I don't know. Do you remember the Phoenix Lights when that happened on March 13th of 1997?
I think I heard of it before, but I haven't looked into it very much. But when I was reading your information, I was really intrigued.
Well, on March 13th of 1997, thousands of people were outside looking for Hale-Bopp, the comet, and what they saw on a clear night was a low-flying, mile-wide, V-shaped formation of orbs and a craft that glided silently overhead over Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And thousands of people saw it, and it went across Arizona. I think it actually started up in Nevada. And the event was hailed as the largest sighting of UFOs in modern times. And what's really interesting is that witnesses said they reported positive changes in their lives with clarity of thought, concentration, and a dramatic sense of love and connectedness to family. And, of course, meanwhile, the military is telling everybody that it was flares that they were, you know, dropping from the sky. And I started thinking, well, how can you get that feeling from flares? There's just no way.
Exactly. And I of course, was, aware of the event. But the thing that got me was what you wrote about people saying that it changed their lives and everything else. Mm-hmm. I had never heard of that until I read it. And I think that's really interesting, too, because, I mean, it's light and different things that people are looking at. And light, you know, it is a higher vibration, and so maybe it would cause a lot of love and positive, you know, energy.
Right, right. And what's really interesting, what I found very interesting about it, is Phoenix was actually named after the mythical bird, the phoenix, which is found in just about every culture. Native Americans called it the Thunderbird, and it represents the sun. And I thought, well, you know, were they trying to tell us that something is going to happen? And again, March 13th, that date. And another really interesting date was August 13th, 2001, when one of the largest UK crop circle formations in recorded history was created on that day. And what amazed researchers about the crop formation were the 409 individual circles formed in a spiral pattern. Now, 409 equals 13.
So crazy.
And they said the sheer size and complexity of the formation was staggering. It's estimated if hoaxers made it, they would have had to make one circle every 30 seconds during the nighttime hours to create it.
Unbelievable.
So again, I think we've been warned.
I think so, too, and I think I need to have a show just on the number 13.
I know.
I mean, there's so many different situations and everything. Betsy, I just want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight and for taking time to go over so many random things. I mean, there's just so much I'd like to talk to you about. Is there anything that you'd like to promote or any way that anybody can get a hold of your books or if you have websites or anything like that you'd like to promote?
Oh, yes, I would. My website is BetsyLewis.com, and Betsy is spelled a little bit different. It's Betsy, B-E-T-S-E-Y, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S.com. And I have an Earth News One blog. I put everything on there, my predictions, if I feel there's going to be an earthquake, anything going on with the sun, and UFO reports, anything that's going on that I think is really interesting. And I do have some articles on there that they can read about how we can change our Earth, how we can change timelines if we all come together and reconnect with the Earth and pray. I believe we can change anything. And right now I think our Earth is dying and we need help. It needs our help. It needs our love. And we're the only ones that can change it. We have the power to do that. I think we have to human up out there.
I think so, too. And I just want to say thank you so much for the inspirational interview.
Thank you.
And I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you. You too, Lori.
All right. Thank you so much, Betsy. And
take
you
care.
Take care. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into The Dirt. Up next is Bob Day and the Great American Story. After that, we've got Zach and Brian, The Zach and Brian Show. So everybody stay tuned, and we will see you next week on The Dirt.